Westeros. Hebrews might not think him worthy of the silver, but Pate knew how to set a bone and leech a fever. The small folk would be grateful for his help. If he could learn to cut hair and shave beards, he might even be a barber. That would be enough, he told himself, so long as I had Rosie. Rosie was all that he wanted in the world. That had not always been so. Once he had dreamed of being a maester in a castle, a service to some open-handed lord who would honour him for his wisdom and bestow a fine white horse on him to thank him for his service. How high he'd ride, how nobly smiling down at the small folk when he passed them on the road. One night, in the Quill and Tankard's common room, after his second tankard of fearsomely strong cider, Pate had boasted that he would not always be a novice. "Too true," Lazy Leo had called out. "You'll be a former novice, herding swine." He drained the dregs of his tankard. The torchlit terrace of the Quill and Tankard was an island of light in a sea of mist this morning. Downriver, the distant beacon of the high tower floated in a damp of night like a hazy orange moon, but the light did little to lift his spirits. "The alchemists should have come by now." Had it all been some cruel jape, or had something happened to the man? It would not have been the first time that good fortune had turned sour on Pate. He had once counted himself lucky to be chosen to help old Archmaester Walgrave with the ravens, never dreaming that before long he would also be fetching the man's meals, sweeping out his chambers, and dressing him every morning. Everyone said that Walgrave had forgotten more of Ravencraft than most maesters ever knew, so Pate assumed a black iron link was the least that he could hope for, only to find that Walgrave could not grant him one. The old man remained an archmaester only by courtesy. As great a maester as once he'd been, now his robes concealed soiled small clothes, oft as not, and half a year ago some acolytes found him weeping in the library, unable to find his way back to his chambers. Maester Gorman sat below the iron mask in Walgrave's place, the same Gorman who had once accused Pate of theft. In the apple tree beside the water, a nightingale began to sing. It was a sweet sound, a welcome respite from the harsh screams and endless quawkings of the ravens he had tended all day long. The white ravens knew his name, and would mutter it to each other whenever they caught sight of him. "Pate! Pate! Pate!" until he wanted to scream. The big white birds were Archmaester Walgrave's pride. He wanted them to eat him when he died, but Pate half suspected they meant to eat him too. Perhaps it was the fearsomely strong cider. He had not come here to drink, but Alaris had been buying to celebrate his copper link, and guilt had made him thirsty. But it almost sounded as if the nightingales were trilling, "Gold for iron! Gold for iron! Gold for iron!" which was passing strange, because that was what the stranger had said the night Rosie brought the two of them together. "Who are you?" Pate demanded of him, and the man had replied, "An alchemist. I can change iron into gold." And then the coin was in his hand, dancing across his knuckles, the soft yellow gold shining in the candlelight. On one side was a three-headed dragon, on the other the head of some dead king. "Gold for iron," Pate remembered. "You won't do better. Do you want her? Do you love her?" "I'm no thief," he told the man who had called himself the alchemist.
"I am a novice of the citadel."
The alchemist had bowed his head and said,
"If you should reconsider, I shall return here 3 days hence with my dragon."
3 days had passed. Pate had returned to the Quill and Tankard, still uncertain what he was, but instead of the alchemist he found Melander and Armin and the Sphinx, with Rune in tow. It would have raised suspicions not to join them. The Quill and Tankard never closed. For 600 years it had been standing on its island in the Honeywine, and never once had its doors been shut to trade. Though the tall timber building leaned toward the south, the way novices sometimes leaned,